tell me what you know.
I think it's a good strategy, actually. Best way to stay safe from the gobblers. Move in with one of them. That's what they call it, isn't it? The initials, you see, General Ablation Board.
Gobbler.
She's involved.
She is the Ablation Board. It's entirely her own project. You didn't know?
Welcome to Kinfolk Lore, a podcast where we explore fictional worlds that bring people together. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul, and we're cousins who love to talk about world building in sci-fi and fantasy. We hope that over time, through our shared love of stories, we'll become family on this podcast journey also.
For our first season, we're discussing His Dark Materials, the HBO-BBC television show. Today, we're going to walk through the episode and talk about our reflections on this world. So if you haven't watched His Dark Materials episode 2, which is called The Idea of the North, please stop, watch it, and come back when you're finished.
In addition, we want to let you know that there will be adult themes and commentary on this podcast. So lock up your study and tell that golden monkey demon to keep down the racket so he doesn't wake the kiddos. This is episode 2.
Okay, great. So should we get into the episode summary?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Okay. So in this first scene, Lyra and Mrs. Coulter arrive in London. We saw them traveling there at the end of last episode. Lyra is super surprised at the beauty and the size of Mrs. Coulter's apartment. She's sort of wandering around and exploring. And while she's doing that, Mrs. Coulter is being a little sketchy and locking every floor on the elevator of the building. She also tells Lyra that she'd prefer for her private study to remain private, basically telling Lyra, stay out of there. At the same time, Roger is also arriving in his new home, which is a rundown dormitory style room where all of the stolen and missing children are being housed. He's reunited with Billy Costa, and they have the cutest, most adorable hug.
They're both so cute. They're stinking yeah. cute. Both of these kids.
It's just, these two kids are so cute. I'm so worried about them. So that all happens before the credits roll. The next scene at breakfast, Mrs. Coulter is asking Lyra if she's afraid of heights. She has this chilling line that she says, I've never been sure about them heights. I can never get away from the occasional urge to jump, which Mrs. Coulter is creepy.
Okay, we're going to stop right here just for a second. And we're just going to talk about, I know we're not at Reflections yet, but man, this well-put-together facade that Mrs. Coulter has is coming apart. To quote my guy, Cat Williams, you're angry at breakfast? Like, you're talking about suicidal ideations at breakfast. Like, what is happening? Oh, my gosh, this lady.
She's like, still smiling and being sweet, but she is definitely an incredibly angry person. Like, there's just something underneath, she's...
It's definite foreshadowing for the self-loathing that she feels and is present throughout the whole story, right? Like, so you see that, but then she also, like, there's that moment where she's saying this about, I've always thought about jumping and having this weird, you know, relationship with heights. And Lyra, like, literally you cut to Lyra and her eyes get wide and she's like, okay, this lady is not... It's starting to come apart for Lyra. She's like, okay, this is weird.
Right, already. This is like their first full day together.
Yeah.
So for lunch that day, they go to the Arctic Institute where there are other explorers dining. Lyra is psyched. She's just like, this is amazing. And you also kind of see this is where Mrs. Coulter is very concerned about Lyra's behavior. She's basically like, can you just sit down and be a dutiful child? Mm-hmm. And in this conversation that they have, Mrs. Coulter also starts to discuss power and how she wants to mold Lyra into a powerful person, and that Lyra needs to let her do that.
Yeah, yeah. And this is like 100% this episode. There's two things that start to come together. One, Mrs. Coulter is making crazy moves. Like, she's super duper not wrapped so tight. And then tons of humble brags. I mean, this is like the moment, tons of humble brags. Like, she rolls up to the crib. She's like, is this all yours? She says, no, just the first floor.
Just one floor.
Yeah, the whole floor. Just like, nah, not really. No, just a little floor. That's all. And then they get to the Arctic Institute, which apparently is all the rage with the kids because Lyra is super duper hyped and blown away. And she's like, she literally asked her. She said, is that the guy, right, with the guy with the mean slick back that's sitting at the table looking like an explorer? She goes, is that the Scaling who mapped the currents of the Great Northern Ocean? And Mrs. Coulter goes, hello, Eliza. And she's like, you know him? And she, wait for it. Wait for a second. She's like, yeah, of course. Like, of course. I'm that bitch. I know everybody. Like, I'm that one. You know what I mean? Like, that's me. You know? That's,
yeah. Wow. She also has that, like, do you see any other women in this room?
Yeah.
Look around you. Yeah. And I'm just like, oh, okay. All right. Yeah. We get it.
She is wild. Mrs. Coulter is definitely coming apart. And yeah, I'm a little concerned. And it brings me to the next scene that we look at is where Mrs. Coulter, after they leave the Arctic Institute, right? Mrs. Coulter is bathing Lyra and strongly, like super strongly, suggests that she change her hair, maybe cut it short. Lyra protests a bit eventually. And then she says, you know what? Long hair could be cool. And she goes into this weird, like, Roger story where she's apparently Rapunzel and saves him in Jordan College. By him climbing up her hair. Mrs. Coulter aggressively tells Lyra, please, don't lie to me. At this moment, Pan looks shook. He's completely worried. Like, you're seeing it in his eyes, okay? He's, like, shook. And then Mrs. Coulter tells Lyra that she could be, and this is a big one, extraordinary, that she really could be special, but that she needs to be prepared to change and to become better. She needs someone to mold her, and we can all take a guess who Mrs. Coulter thinks is the best person to do that. So the next thing that we see is Lyra in her room with Pan, and they're unpacking this whole interaction that he just had that was weird in the bathroom. And Pan bars from my guy Pan. The homie Pan is sitting here like, we shouldn't change just so we can fit in here. Like, keep it real, Lyra. Let's stay the same. Let's not forget about Roger. Let's not move on. This is her conscience, because inside, this is really an outside version of her soul, right? So basically, Lyra's torn. She looks at it and she says, you know, no one's ever told me that I could be extraordinary before. And Pan, don't we deserve to have nice things for once? Which is a heart-wrenching thing. Like, she's never had anything nice. She feels abandoned by her parents. In the other room, Mrs. Coulter is in deep thought by the bathtub, blankly staring off into space. In a scene that we can only describe as creepy as hell. Like, literally, she's just gazing. Like, this is creepy. Like, for real. So she's only broken out of this long stare by grilling her golden monkey, who then looks down and does not make eye contact with her. And this is, like, another key, because the demon is really the outside representation of the human soul in this world. This is another key of the level of hate that Mrs. Coulter has for herself, that her demon wouldn't even want to look her in the eyes and look down because he's scared of her, right? So that night, Pan hears a distant banging sound in the other room, to which Lyra is unappreciative of the early wake-up call and throws a pillow. In the next scene, the Egyptians come in and storm a rundown building, looking for the missing kids after hatching their plan to do so. They find no kids, but they do find Billy's sweater. Lord Fa asks a pivotal question that we'll be asking for a lot on this show. What do the gobblers want with these children? We cut to Roger and Billy. On a new location, Billy is missing his mom. Roger tells Billy, well, he doesn't have a mom to miss, which is super gut-wrenching.
And his poor Roger,
right? Like, he's like, you know what? You're sitting here whining about your mom. I have no mom, and now I've been kidnapped, right? So,
yeah, it's so sad.
Man, and then his...
Yeah, his... Oh, poor... Anyway, no. I could just moon over these kids all day, but what's...
I mean, rightfully so, right? Like, it's super tough. Like, I can't even... I mean, Roger's heartbreaking. I want to also mention that the person who's on lookout, which bothers me that Lyra never mentions him. She's always like, oh, we'll have Roger. But the person on lookout for Roger and Billy right now is Cecilia. Like, Cecilia is Roger's demon. And I always wonder how Cecilia feels that she's never mentioned by Lyra in multiple episodes. But that's a whole other story for a whole other time. So His aunt basically raised him, is what Roger tells Billy. And then he went to Jordan College, and then he met Lyra. And he knows, like without a shadow of a doubt, that Lyra is looking for them.
Except Lyra's not looking for them. She's legit getting ready for a party. She's out there getting fitted for a dress.
Oh my God, and complaining about the, I like to run around, you know, like what? Oh my gosh, Lyra, come on.
Yeah. I mean, in fairness to Lyra, like, we're laughing about it, but she is putting pressure on Mrs. Coulter to find him, yeah. But she's not looking for him at all. Yeah. You know, she's putting her trust in this woman to find her best friend.
I think it's also important to note that as she's doing this, her hair has changed. She has definitely got a haircut.
Yes. Right? I noticed that right away. I was like, okay, so I guess she did change her hair. Yeah. I mean, this scene where she's getting ready for the party, which is, you know, just at the tail end of what we were just talking about, is really the beginning of, like, Lyra trying to change to suit Mrs. Coulter. And, you know, as we'll talk about in a few minutes, like, that doesn't last very long. You know, she's trying to will, like, she even says to Pan as she's, when she tries on this dress, that it will help her wield power in kind of like a sarcastic, like mocking
way. She mocks her mad times in this episode. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Lyra is super smart. Yeah. You know, she's not, and she, even though she does trust Mrs. Coulter, she's distrustful of people in general, I think. Yeah. And she doesn't see authority the same way probably most children do, just because she's been running around telling these scholars, like, you know, YOLO, like, mind your business.
Yeah.
This whole time.
Yeah, I agree. And while I like, totally, like, made a joke about, like, oh, she's saying, like, I like to run around and all sorts of stuff, the reality of it is she's at that point trying to say, hey, this isn't me. This doesn't fit me. This is not who I am. Like, I like to do these other kind of things. She's an explorer at heart and an adventurer at heart, just like something that will be talked about later in the episode. But she has that in her. Like, she wants to do that. And this dress feels restrictive, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think we kind of already talked about some of this stuff with Mrs. Coulter. Like, you're beginning to see that this is a woman who is really uncomfortable with who she is. She really does hate herself. And in the theme of this episode, to me, really seemed like change and when it's good and when it's not. And so it made me wonder if, like, what was Mrs. Coulter like before? Because you can tell that she really hates who she's become. She has some moments, right? Like, she looks genuinely moved when Lyra is jumping on the bed and is excited about having something, right? Having this beautiful room. She does look, you see that she's happy, right, in that moment. But then right after, as the happiness kind of settles in, you can see, like, her own sense of dread is coming to the surface. She knows that Lyra's not there just to have fun. Like, she knows that she has some plan for her.
Well, I think that there's a moment that happens there that I caught on, like, my second watch, where I was moved by the foreshadowing of it, because when Lyra's jumping on the bed, Mrs. Coulter's face changes when Lyra starts playing and she says, I'm drowning, I'm drowning. And I believe that's super important foreshadowing for this ominous look that comes over her face, for the fact that both of them are kind of drowning. Lyra is in way over her head and doesn't even know it yet. She's with a person who is doing things that she's not even aware of, involved in places she's not aware of. And later in the episode, we see how much Mrs. Coulter kind of feels like she's not, like, literally over her head as much as Lyra, but she definitely feels like she's getting some pushback from the places where she didn't expect to. So I think that foreshadowing of I'm drowning is showing just how much Lyra is, like, not aware of what's happening for her.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. So the next scene, we're back at Jordan, and Lord Boreal, who is just, someone should just put, like, a flashing sign over him that says villain.
Lord Baby Dreads. I love him.
Yeah. We will talk about his hair. Yeah. But we'll get there.
Oh, man. Not quite dreadlocks.
So he's up in the master's face. Yeah. Like, I need to see Grumman's remains. Yeah. Let me see this. And the master, more power to him, word, is like, no. First, he puts his arm out and his crow demon settles on his arm. And then he's like, you can go. Like, you don't need to be here.
At that moment, my fiance says to me, he's like Black Dumbledore. Wait, he's Blumbledore. Like, he is. I was like, this is great. I gotta say that.
Yeah, so. he was really just like, you can go. Yeah. We have our Scholastic Sanctuary. I mean, he looks a little worried when Boreal's like, so what you're doing is not covered by Scholastic Sanctuary.
Heresy!
But he holds his ground.
He goes out with the heresy again. He goes, that's heresy. And he's like, here we go. We're back with heresy. It's one of my favorite lines of this thing so far. It's great.
And so after that, we go back to London, and Mrs. Coulter and Lyra, I guess, are doing lessons. Lyra's reading some book about electrons, mm-hmm, and she's bored. And Mrs. Coulter seems alarmed when Lyra mentions dust. Lyra starts telling her actually quite a bit about dust, basically repeating what Asriel had said previously. So Mrs. Coulter just kind of tries to keep her facade of like, I don't know what you're talking about. She says she doesn't know anything about it. Meanwhile, she's grabbing her demon, the golden monkey, like for dear life under the table, like very basically pressing her nails into him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just another point where you're like, why is she lying to her in this way? She's like, you can tell me more about it, I'm sure. Lyra also lies to Mrs. Coulter in this moment again, which is another running theme. Lyra has been just lying this whole episode. I mean, she's telling these big stories. She is lying about where she heard about dust. So she obviously, even though she wants to trust Mrs. Coulter, she doesn't really trust
her. Well, Pan gives her the quick shake head. He's like, Lyra, you in danger, girl. Stop. Don't do it.
Yeah,
don't
yeah,
do
he
it.
Really does.
You
know? Yeah, Pan is, can we just say, Pan is holding Lyra down.
Yeah.
Like, he is a ride or die. He is the only one who is thinking straight in a lot of these moments. Pan is my man.
Yeah.
Like, I like Pan.
Yeah, this episode, Pan really comes through because he really does show up as her conscience. He's really like, hey, you know what? We don't have to change. Hey, this is, like, be easy with how much you're just falling into what this all is. We don't know this situation yet. So he's really the representation of her, of the thing that you're talking about, where she's not quite trusting yet of who this person is.
Yeah, and so then the next scene is pretty rough. We see Mont Costa, who is really struggling. I mean, her son is missing. Tony really wants to help find his brother, Billy. And she basically says no, which I have to say in this moment, I really liked that Ma Costa is one of the few adults that seems to really understand that children should be children.
Yeah. Some adult supervision actually is coming into play. Yeah. 100%.
Absolutely. So Lord Fa shows up with his crew and basically says, we didn't find Billy, but we did find this sweater, so we know he was there. And Ma Costa is just overcome by finding Billy's sweater. And then there's this moment where Lord Fa and Ma Costa get a little cozy.
Lord Fa shows up, like, and then he shows up. You know what I mean? Like, that's what he does. That's who Ma,
yeah, I was like, what is going... It's so funny because up until this point in the episode, this was like a big revel. I was like, oh, snap, look at this. There's a romance here. Also, is Lord Fa Billy's dad?
Well, that's what it took me back to our first episode where you were saying you like that the Egyptians are multicultural and that, you know, even Tony and Billy don't look like they have like they're actually biological brothers. And then when Lord Fa and Ma Costa like get cozy like that, I was like, oh, wait. That could be it. This is like his dad, maybe. And that's a revelation, obviously, for, you know, full disclosure, for book readers, that's not disclosed in book one or two, at least that I know of. And so far, I haven't read anything to that nature. So it was pretty, I'm interested to see where they go with this. 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. I like a good romance. I was like, yes.
Me too. I was rooting for it. I'm rooting for those guys. I am. I'm rooting for them for sure. Anyway, so where else are we at here?
So I think I think we covered most of the stuff from this scene. I mean, we did a little bit skip over that Mrs. Coulter makes a kind of snide comment about Lord Asriel in when Lyra is getting fitted for the dress. You know, she's like, oh, what would my uncle think? And Mrs. Coulter's like, he would be delighted or what. You know, she's kind of...
With the eye roll emoji. Like, she had the eye. Yes, yes. Like he would be delighted with
that. I don't think that Lyra picked up on that, but she's clearly not Lord Asriel's biggest fan.
No, no. As we find out later on, for sure, she's not his biggest fan. So, so, I mean, the other thing I would speak to is the point where, did we cover that Boreal is concerned about Grumman crossing between worlds?
Did that happen in this?
He is. He's concerned. He's basically saying that it's been rumored that he talks to, when he's talking to the master, he says, you know, it's been rumored that Grumman could cross between worlds.
Yes. He did say that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, listen, there's so much happens with Boreal in this episode that it's hard to keep track, because it's like every time he's on screen, I was like, wait, what? What? We're going here? This is happening? So, yeah, I mean... I wanted to know a few things about Boreal. First of all, who told him what happened when Asriel came to Jordan?
Well, there's a snitch. There's a snitch in there. There's a snitch in the room,
there's
sure.
Definitely a snitch. I would love to know who reported Asriel's presentation, and that the college also is funding his exploration and his mission.
Yeah.
Then there are rumors that Grumman has crossed between worlds, and... I think this is the point where the master is like, heresy. And I wondered, is the rumors that Grumman has crossed between worlds. So like people know that there's worlds to cross between, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. That seems like such a big revelation in the previous episode that there are other worlds, right? Mm-hmm. And then in this episode, it seems like, there's at least some people are aware. Maybe it's just the magisterium and scholars are aware that there are other worlds and that you can cross between them. But it just seemed, I was a little bit surprised by that, because it seemed like that was like a big, no one knew this, right?
Yeah.
Like one episode ago, they're shocked to see this city in the lights. And now it's like, oh yeah, like the rumors are flying around that not only are there other worlds, but like, he crossed between them.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that was a revelation to the scholars in the room, possibly, but that the magisterium really does know this already, obviously, because Lord Boreal is crossing between worlds with the ease. And we should maybe move on to that. Like, so what happens next is at the magisterium, a cardinal speaks to Father MacPhail and says that the General Oblation Board is causing problems as the Egyptians have raided one of their hiding places to look for the children. Father MacPhail is charged with telling the Oblation Board, control it or they'll lose everything. Back in the flat, Pan and Lyra investigate a strange noise. She follows the sound through a ventilation system and ends up in Mrs. Coulter's study, where she finds Mrs. Coulter's demon alone. Mrs. Coulter appears on the other side of the hallway. Lyra is startled and wants to know how is Mrs. Coulter able to be so far away from her demon. Mrs. Coulter lies and says, we never were separated, Lyra. You must be sleepy. Go back to bed. And then we go back to Jordan College, where Boreal and his snake...
Tiny Nagini.
Tiny Nagini? Oh, God. What a name. ...are snooping around, and they end up in the tomb, where they find a skull that they believe to be Grumman's and determine that Asriel is lying and isn't Grumman at all. Let's pause right now for a moment.
Yes. Let's talk about, okay, a couple of things. I want to address the little snake. All right, so I'm going to reference the Harry Potter movies. Mm-hmm. Nagini is terrifying. Mm-hmm. That is Lord Voldemort's snake. And Nagini is huge. And I still prefer Nagini to this little slithering snake. The snake is like disgusting. It can get in and out of rooms unnoticed. I do not like Boreal's snake. Again, flashing light, villain. Right yeah. over his head.
Yeah.
But let's just talk about Grumman's skull, okay? Because multiple people are like, I can identify this man through looking at this I guess originally it was just a head in ice.
It's a block. Block of ice. That's what it was. It wasn't even a head. It was just a block of dirty ice. Go ahead. Continue. Sorry.
In the previous episode, we're like, I don't know how he can tell because we can't see anything. But, you know, this scholar is like, oh, it could be him. Now we have the little tiny snake and Boreal looking at a skull and being like, no, it's not him. I would like to know how so many people can identify this guy with no discerning attributes at all. Like, he's just, like, how do you know it's his skull? I've known you my whole life. I would not know what your skull looks like.
No, exactly.
Yeah, I was just like, how do you, I mean, maybe there's some injury that Grumman had that would have changed his skull. Like, I don't know, but I'm just kind
it's
of
the
like,
high cheekbone structure. It's the high cheekbones. It's, you know, he had a chipped tooth right there. I could tell.
Yeah, he's that's just him. Like, it's not him.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. But, you know, he seems convinced that somewhere, like, basically that is proof that Ariel is lying, right? Azrael is lying. So somewhere on the grounds, he goes to a greenhouse, and then all of a sudden he's like creeping, and we don't know why he's creeping and looking over his shoulder. And then there it is, another world.
Okay, I need to, I have a whole, I so I this whole, I was just, you're hearing exactly how I reacted when I saw this the first time. And then again, when I saw it the second time, because the first time I was like, wait, what? It's episode two. We're crossing into another world. Mm-hmm. What's going on? Mm-hmm. And I didn't even register my first viewing that this guy has a car. Yes. And a cell phone.
Yeah.
And then my second viewing, I'm like, okay, I'm prepared for him to go through this portal. I know he's going into another world. It's clearly, I mean, I would say this is our world.
Yeah.
Right? This is 2019 London. And then I'm like, wait, he has a car and parking tickets and like an iPhone 8? Like, what's going on?
Oh, man.
Boreal's cell phone is more like up to date than mine. I'm just yeah. out there.
Yeah. He's just a little bit behind the 10, not quite the 7. You know, like he's. He's there. But, you know, I think what throws me is, and you know, I'm saying this for people who are, you know, watching the shows, haven't read the books or have an interest in the books. The whole first book, which I know that in episode one, there already was some stuff from the book four and other stuff that kind of was meshed in. And I kind of liked the way they did some of that. But the whole first book, The Golden Compass, is about Lyra's world, the world that we're in before Boreal crossed over. So we're getting kind of into a place where if you haven't read the books, the show could spoil the books for you. And so it's important to know that these ideas are getting mixed up for maybe probably good reasons. I would think that in a show you want to tell a linear story, and sometimes it can be different than what's in the books, as we've seen in other series. But that's kind of what I'm picking up is I was kind of blown away just because I have not totally finished every single book, but I knew already that we were into new territory, you know?
Absolutely. I was shocked. I think I said on our first episode, they're not going to do this and they're not going to do that. It's too early. And then here we have them moving into another world, which I'm for it, right? I'm excited by this change. I think it's important for our listeners to know that if you have only read The Golden Compass, or if you haven't read the books at all, but you were interested because you liked the first episode and you like this world, just know that they're into territory that hasn't even been revealed in the first book. So it's clear that they're not following this story in the same timeline in which the chronological order of the books.
Yeah.
I mean, they are a little bit, and I don't want to spoil the books. I don't want to spoil the books more, right?
Yeah.
But I think that it's interesting that they've made some decisions here. This is pretty bold to mm-hmm. cross into another world. We just learned there are more than one world last episode, and now we're crossing into another world in the second episode of this show.
Yeah.
And this was just the first thing that happened in this episode that I was like, wow, we're doing this already?
Yeah.
I mean, there are other things that I was like, I don't believe how fast this is moving.
Yeah, I agree. And it further, I think, validated our choice to talk to the audience and try to stick as close to the show away from the books as possible, where we'll bring in some stuff that we know from the books, but we want to stick to the show so that book readers, you know, if you've read all the books, none of this is going to surprise you. You'll just be like, oh, wow, they mixed that with that. That's interesting. I don't know if I like that or I like this way, way more. But if you have not read any of the books and you're watching the show, going back and reading the books will be a little different and a revelation to you for sure. You know what I mean?
So. Yeah, definitely. All right. So to move on to the next scene, Father Mikhail arrives at Mrs. Coulter's flat in London, and it is an icy reunion between these two. She is not happy to see him.
Yeah.
Pan notices right away that Father Mikhail's from the Magisterium, and he basically tells Lyra, you got to find out what's going on. Pan is very suspicious of Mrs. Coulter, and now this Magisterium official is showing up in her apartment. She overhears.
She wants to know, would you like some water? Some wine? I was like, whoa, all right, easy, Mrs. Coulter, jeez. Anyway.
Yeah, she was laying it on. Would you like some tea? Yeah. He's like, I'm good. I came to talk. I didn't come to chit-chat and socialize. I came to let you know we're not okay.
Yeah.
So Lyra overhears their conversation. She's kind of interrupted by Father Mikhail's minion, whose demon is like some disgusting little bug, which I was totally
creeped out. It's a bug.
I mean, there's multiple demon bugs in this episode, but I was just, this one was especially gross.
Sucks to be him. Like, you know, if you can kill a person by killing their demon, how many bugs get killed a year, you think? Like, that guy's in trouble. He's not going to be long for the world. Like, right? Like, it's a problem. Anyway, it's, whew. Okay.
Yeah. So Father Mikhail's message is basically like, listen, we're very excited about the research you're doing, but there's too much attention being drawn to what you're doing because these kids are going missing and the Egyptians are on your tail. So can you get it under control? At that point, Mrs. Coulter tells him to leave.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, listen, we're going to we have the opportunity here to understand dust. No one seems to really understand it. And she's like, you got to go. And he delivers a pretty, I was going to say veiled, not veiled. He's basically like, listen, at the end of the day, the most important thing is protecting the Magisterium's power. Mm-hmm. So he says that as he leaves, he essentially says, we will do anything to preserve our power. Mm-hmm. And Lyra and Pan are a little bit, a lot concerned. Mm-hmm. Pan is like, you need to protect the alethiometer. This woman is not to be trusted. I mean, they were already really freaked out by the whole thing with her demon. And now someone from the Magisterium is showing up in the apartment. So Lyra decides that she's going to put the alethiometer in a little purse and wear it around her all the time.
No, the best place to hide it is a super conspicuous handbag that is white and like stands out in any outfit. It's like, oh, wow, it's a white handbag. It's best.
Yeah, as soon as she put it in there, I was like, this is not, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Like, what, this is so obvious. And then when Mrs. Coulter comes to talk to her, basically just say like, you're a child and please do not get involved in big people's things, which I really related to because, you know, that's how our family rolls. Like, I could not sit at the adult table until I was like 30.
Yeah.
And she is holding on to this bag. Really, obviously, like, I'm sitting here like, Mrs. Coulter's gonna just snatch the bag from you to look inside of it, because like any adult would have done that,
but she doesn't. You know what she does? She like totally like lays her low about her fashion choices. That's a stupid bag. It looks dumb. Like, you look, yeah, like she's like killing her.
Who walks around their own house with a purse, which is fair. It's definitely fair. She's like you look dumb, take off the purse. God. The next exchange is so chilling. Ooh. So Lyra basically says, you lost control. Mm. To which Mrs. Coulter is like, no, I'm totally in control. Lyra responds, you are angry and you are still angry now. Mm. And Mrs. Coulter is like, I'm not angry. Everything's fine. And starts to walk away. And then she's like, you know what? I'm going to put this little girl in her place.
Mm-hmm.
And she makes this sound, which is essentially a command to the golden monkey to whoop Pan's ass. Mm. Like, this monkey savagely attacks Pan, which hurts Lyra in a way that I think I was very surprised by how affected Lyra was by Pan getting hurt. And Pan is just getting killed by this. Like, this monkey is just destroying Pan. Pan keeps trying to change, and he just, like, never gets it right. I think he's caught off so off guard that, like, his best defense is a cat.
A cat.
Like,
a cat.
Yeah, I was like, Pan, sir, turn into a tiny bug. Turn into
anything other than a cat to fight a monkey.
Like, a big animal. Like, this monkey is vicious. And that whole scene is really terrible because Lyra is yelling out to Mrs. Coulter, this is not you, you're not like this. Then she says, I'm going to tell my uncle. To which Mrs. Coulter responds, that man has never done anything for you. He's a failure as a man, and he is a failure as a father. Surprising literally everyone in the room. Wow. Even the monkey is like, what?
Yeah.
Like, the monkey stops beating up Pan because the monkey is like, what did you just say? Everyone stops. Mrs. Coulter is shocked by what she says. I mean, she's really, Lyra's right. She's really lost control in this moment.
Yep.
And just to finish out the scene, this is like a very sobering moment. Everyone kind of comes down and Lyra essentially is processing what she just learned, that Lord Asriel, who she believed to be her uncle, is actually her father and has been lying to her. Asriel is the person that her only family that she's known of. She's been wanting to spend more time with him. He's probably the only person aside from Roger that she loves. Mm-hmm. And now she's learning that he's been lying to her whole life. And she asks Mrs. Coulter, who's my mother? And Mrs. Coulter says, I don't really know. Your dad's kind of a womanizer.
So
at this point, I wouldn't say they're making up, but Lyra basically goes to her room. She asks to be alone, and Mrs. Coulter tries to say to her, you shouldn't be upset by this. Like, our origins don't define us. And so Lyra turns to the alethiometer once Mrs. Coulter leaves to ask, like, what's the deal with Mrs. Coulter and where's Roger? Which I was just like, oh, she needs her buddy back. And she says, tell me anything. Like, she's begging the alethiometer to just guide her in some way. It's like the only thing that she has that is able to guide her. And then she kind of tossed it away because nothing's happening. And as she does that, the dials move.
Yeah, this scene went from, I mean, the whole thing is quite like intense. I felt at the edge of my seat watching this, knowing that there was going to be a confrontation. We're gonna, if you keep behaving like this, we're gonna have a confrontation. That's almost directly from the book. And knowing that they were gonna, you know, the demons were gonna go at each other from reading it. And I still felt the intense feeling of the interaction and the exchange between them. But what I was not ready for, and it's a complete change, was her to drop like all the knowledge about her dad and that Lord Asriel was her father. And that kind of, the same way that you see their reaction on the screen is how my reaction was. I couldn't believe that first we had gone that far into the story so quick, because it's one of the big reveals in the book. And then it was just the emotion of Lyra being in her room, needing to be left alone, wanting help. Help me. Tell me about who this lady is. Tell me about, you know, who my Lord Asriel is. She stopped. She can't even say who my father is because she's not ready to, like, accept that reality yet. And you know, tell me where Roger is. And the sadness in her voice. And then we get a little bit of hope. Because if you left the scene there, I would feel shattered and broken. But you get a little bit of hope in the fact that when she actually closes her eyes and leans back, the dial moves, that there is going to be some way for her when she, like, concentrates to be able to work with this tool that she was given by the master.
Yeah. This scene was a lot. I mean, I think if the previous scene we hadn't crossed into another world, this would have been the most, the biggest revelation in this episode. It was, I recall this scene with the two demons fighting and this was savage. Like, this was really, that monkey is terrifying. And I want to talk more about the monkey at the end of the episode, because I also think that the golden monkey is revealing a lot of things too about Mrs. Coulter. But yeah, this scene was a hard one. I felt so bad for her. And it really highlights that Lyra is kind of alone on this journey. I mean, she's just by herself. She has this alethiometer that she doesn't even know how to use. No one's there to tell her how to use it. And it's like her prized possession because the master told her that she should hold on to it and keep it secret, but it's not giving her any comfort or any help.
Yeah. It's really, really rough. And I think that, you know, what you're hitting on about nobody giving her guidance. Again, this is another place where it goes back to where she's talking about, you know, no one's ever told me I could be extraordinary. No one's ever, you know, told me that anything special or good could happen in my life. And this is why she's so ready to buy in. And then she gets, you know, this point of, don't I deserve to have something nice? Don't we deserve that for once? And again, now this whole idea and concept is being snatched away from her, which is part of what adds to that lonely feeling in that scene, because she feels totally alone again. Once again, the thing that she thought was going to be something that was good to hold on to is gone. And she knows, even if she's not willing to accept in that moment, that everything's changed, that this lady is exactly the opposite of what she's saying, that this is not who you are. It's very much who she is. And she knows that something's up with her at this point.
Yeah.
So moving on to the next scene, we have Boreal meeting with his otherworldly homie, Thomas. He tells Thomas to find Grumman because he believes that he's alive. Back in the London flat, Mrs. Coulter says she cannot find Roger and that he's probably just in Jordan College hanging out. You may just maybe didn't see him and he's not there and maybe we should move on and forget about Roger. She tells Lyra a very, very strong, I mean, this is a powerful comment that she makes about her worldview. She tells Lyra that people have forgotten her at Jordan, that sometimes people forget you when they're not in sight, right? So later when Mrs. Coulter goes out, Pan tells Lyra that she has to find out what Mrs. Coulter is up to. They investigate her study by going through the ventilation system. Meanwhile, Mrs. Coulter visits the kidnapped children. We find out in a big reveal that Mrs. Coulter is in fact one of the gobblers. She tells them that they're going on a voyage, these children. Mrs. Coulter tells each child that they can write a letter to their families. Roger, with a whole lot of shade, looks at Mrs. Coulter and says, I'll write a letter to Lyra. He narrates the letter saying that they're going to the north and that Lyra would be surprised who's taking them. Mrs. Coulter burns those letters as she walks out the room, knowing that she can never reveal that to Lyra or any of the parents. Lyra finds paperwork from the General Oblation Board and sees that they're going to the north somewhere called the Station and sees the plans for a cutting device and images of humans and their demons. Mrs. Coulter returns to the apartment and Lyra narrowly makes it back to her room before being caught. Lyra seals all of the vents in her room and tries to use the alethiometer again and says she doesn't understand adults at all.
Girl, I don't understand adults at all either. The adults are really perplexed. I'm actually, strike that. All of the adults except for the Egyptian adults who seem totally normal to me.
Word.
They're just like the most normal people in this whole thing. They're just trying to find their kids. So I don't think any of us are surprised at this point that Mrs. Coulter is part of this scheme to snatch the kids. I think that even though it hasn't been heavily foreshadowed, I think this was not a big reveal, but the fact that she has the kids write these letters, and it seems like she's just now realizing that Roger is one of the kids, because when he says his name, she repeats it very quietly, mm-hmm. Roger. So it's like she didn't, maybe she knew, but maybe she, I was a little confused by that. Did she know that Roger was one of the snatched kids, yes or no? And she does seem surprised when he says Lyra's name and Jordan College and then says his name.
Well, she kind of appears to me as someone who can give orders and not because of the power that she has. Mm-hmm. And not even, she just could say, hey, you know what? Find a kid named Roger, not knowing anything of how he looks, what, you know, where he is, and somebody would go and carry that out. So maybe she knew that she was snatching, getting Roger snatched, but didn't know what he looks like or and was a little surprised that he would be so forthright with his name and not try to hide it, maybe. I don't know. That's, mm-hmm. That was how I took the scene.
Okay. I'm glad that Pan encouraged Lyra to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I also just want to say that I know that it may be a little confusing the way that we laid out this scene in our summary. It's just that this was a back and forth. It was like Roger was narrating his letter to Lyra as Lyra was finding the stuff from the General Ablation Board. And they did that multiple times with Lyra and Roger, kind of mirroring what was happening to them. Like in the beginning of the episode, when she's seeing her new home, he's being introduced to his new home. So the cut back and forth is very effective, I think. It was nice to have both of the children's voices as they were. Roger's kind of like blindly saying, oh, we're going north and it's going to be an adventure. And I'm sorry I'm going on this adventure without you. I would never do that by choice. But she's discovering that actually this is something nefarious at the same time. Yeah. So I thought that was very well done. The General Ablation Board. Mm-hmm. Now, this is not the first time in the episode that it was mentioned, but now it seems even more nefarious, right?
Yeah.
Like all of these plans, this device that she found, and the device plans were hidden deep in the desk. She had to remove one of the drawers to find that.
100.
So before it seemed like the General Ablation Board was something that the Magisterium had, you know, in the same way that Asriel got money from the college to do his research, that the General Ablation Board was something Mrs. Coulter ran that was getting money from the Magisterium to do research as well. Now I'm like, okay, what is going... This device was terrifying. It looked like a guillotine.
Yeah. No.
Yeah,
it's very clear that something not only is going on, but that it's quite scary. You know what I mean? Whatever it is you, like you said, it looked like a guillotine. Like somebody was going to get chopped up in that thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, that really concerned me. I guess another thing that kind of, I like that device as well that you're talking about, them cutting back and forth. It also is used when in that scene that we've talked about a bunch in this episode of when Mrs. Coulter's sitting in the bathroom by herself and Lyra's talking about she's nice, and then it cuts to Mrs. Coulter and you see her staring off like kind of like without the kind of nice expression that she shows to the world. And then she said, you know, she cares about us. She starts going into all these things and no one's ever told me I'm special, and it's cutting back and forth. And it only resolves when she, you know, pulls the plug on the bathtub and moves on. But it's that kind of tension that they're creating with telling this story from using the cuts as a perspective change between what's really happening versus the way Lyra sees the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like it.
I do too.
We can talk a little bit more about some of the other production choices at the end, but I thought that I just, the way that this scene was framed with the two children kind of narrating what was happening on screen, it was really well done.
I agree.
Okay, so at this point, we're getting to the party that's been talked about this whole episode.
Ooh,
this big party.
Yes!
First, we see Boreal crosses back into Lyra's world. And then we cut to the party where Lyra is serving drinks and she's approached by this reporter whose name is Adele. The reporter takes Lyra aside and she says, you know, the General Ablation Board is where the word gobbler comes from. Mm-hmm. And Lyra started, like, you could see it's a real teaching moment because Lyra's like, ah, okay, now I get it.
Total moment of mind blown. You saw her eyes go, oh, like she's blown away. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. So now she's already angry at Mrs. Coulter. She sees that Mrs. Coulter is not what she says she is. Mm-hmm. And now she knows that she's also responsible for kidnapping the children.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a pretty revealing scene for Lyra. This reporter gets in trouble immediately. Boreal arrives at the party and we'll talk about his little, his look between him and Mrs. Coulter. I think there's a little history there.
For sure.
Yeah. Well, something's going on They're a little comfortable with each other there.
She chides him. Don't look so impressed with yourself. You know what I mean? Like,
She's like, you're late. And we have to say, Boreal's looking pretty nice at this party.
Oh, he cleans up nice. No, definitely.
Yeah, he looks good.
He's got the baby dreads on fleek, like for 110%.
So, Pan notices that because Mrs. Coulter is distracted with the party, that the elevator is unlocked. And he decides that it's time for Lyra and him to get the hell out of there.
Good call, Pan.
Yeah.
Well done.
Pan, again, for the win. At the same time, Lord Boreal basically says that he's going to take care of the reporter and that Mrs. Coulter should deal with Lyra. Because the reporter was never invited to the party. She's not supposed to be there, and they're concerned about her. So while Lyra goes back to her room to get the alethiometer, Boreal escorts the reporter out. Mrs. Coulter follows Lyra, but she's too late. Lyra and Pan are out the window, you know, doing her thing from Jordan College, gets to the street, and she takes off running. Meanwhile, Boreal escorts Adele to his car and basically is like, you have no right to be here. You shouldn't be asking these questions. She is clearly shook. Like, this woman is terrified. Her demon is a little butterfly, which is very cute.
It was adorable. And
really, really cute. And he compliments the beauty of the butterfly right before he snatches it, which is a big, you do not touch other people's demons.
Big, big rule in the world is that you're not supposed to touch another human's demon. Like, that is very taboo, and it shows that he has no regard for her at all. Like,
no regard for her. And it was actually a little bit, I was scared for her in that moment, and she has this terrified look, and then he kills the butterfly, which kills her instantly. So we learned from this that if a demon dies, the human it's attached to also dies. I think they foreshadowed that with the fight.
Is this is this our first death other than Grumman? Like on this?
Yeah. This is actual murder.
This is actual murder. Not just attempted murder, like the master. Like
attempted murder.
R.I.P. Adele. She tried hard. She definitely tried hard. And she definitely came in. I really love how she comes in kind of like thinking that Lyra already knows, and she's all like, oh, pretty good disguise. Like, if you're going to be, you know, if kids are getting snatched, why not hide with the person who's doing the snatching? Or kind of paraphrasing what she's saying. And Lyra looks lost. Like, what are you talking about? Until she gets her out on the balcony and then explains to her, hey, like, you have no idea, do you? This lady is the General Oblation Board. She is the gobblers. And that, I just love the expression that Lyra has in that moment of, oh my God, this is the worst. She realized in that moment that everything that she thought was fake. And and I'm glad that Pan is like, get out of here. Let's go. Let's bounce. Such a good call, such a good moment. And I felt, to have her so short in the episode, she plays a big role in helping Lyra move to the next phase in her development.
Mm-hmm. Just to finish out this, what happens here, because this is basically the end of the episode. We see the children being gathered up so that they can take their journey north. Roger is crying. He does not want to go. I think Roger's starting to realize this is not going to be an adventure. Lyra's like still running through the city. It's like a city. Now it's dark. And Pan basically tells her, you need to find somewhere to settle. Like, we cannot be running through the city. You need to rest. You're not going to be able to find Roger this way. Like, you're going to have to find somewhere to just like sit down and take a moment. And she does that. And as she's kind of huddles in a doorway to hide. And as she does that, this weird thing happens where Pan hears something, and then he is lured away by the same fox demon that we saw previously stalking Roger. And then Lyra is snatched. So someone picked up our girl Lyra.
Yeah. Yeah, and what a way to leave it off. You're I mean, I'm worried about Lyra. I don't know about anybody else. If you're watching this, you got to be concerned what's going to happen now. Like, where does she go from here? And did she do that running for nothing? Especially if she gets taken back to Mrs. Coulter after taking off. Oh, man, not going to be good.
This episode is actually pretty depressing, you know, because they did some really good character work in the episode, especially with Mrs. Coulter. They did great work around Mrs. Coulter's character, which I know we talked a little bit about the Golden Compass in the last episode of our podcast, but this was one of the problems with the Golden Compass, was that Mrs. Coulter just seemed like this removed, cold person. Yeah. And we didn't really get to see any more about her. I really love what they're doing here with Mrs. Coulter, with Lord Boreal, who also can come off a little bit dry. Mm-hmm. He's, again, flashing light, villain. Mm-hmm. This last scene where Lyra makes a run for it was, I actually was really surprised this happened so early in the season. Again, this season is moving really, really quickly. I thought we were going to have a couple of episodes with Mrs. Coulter where Lyra was kind of figuring out, you know, that she wasn't to be trusted. I was surprised that we learned about the General Ablation Board so early. I think the pacing of the show is really quick, and I'm glad, because remember last week I was like, oh, we're going to get a couple episodes where it's, you know, a little slower. Not yet.
Well, now I can say, in previous episode, I said, I think I have an idea of how they can pull this off. And the first place I went to when we stopped and we kind of talked on our own time, I was like, this has got to happen at the party. The party needs to be the place. I forgot about the Adele piece, but I really thought that the party was going to be the place where this was going to take place, where she's going to get out of there, be able to leave Mrs. Coulter's house. And if they got to the party in the next episode, we could find out more about who the gobblers are. You know, that was what I thought that was going to happen.
Yeah, you did say that you thought it was going to happen. I said that I thought it would be crazy for them to reveal who the gobblers were. I mean, I actually said that. I was like, no, they're not going to do that in the next episode.
Little
did I know.
Which lets me think, though, right? Like, they're probably going, there's going to be some bigger reveals. Like, right, there's going to be things that they're going to craft in a way that if you feel, okay, we can tell Lyra who, you know, her father is early in this whole season, and we can reveal who the gobblers are early in the season, you got to believe that they have some other big things in store the rest of the season.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep, it's really cool. So let's talk about a character study for a brief moment of one of our characters, one of our favorite, least favorites, I'll call him, the Golden Monkey. Let's examine, like, this, the Golden Monkey, first of all, doesn't speak at all. It's the only demon that we've met that does not speak, right?
So doesn't far. Have any name. His name is the Golden, like, we don't, if he has a name, we have yet to learn it.
Yeah. And if he does, I don't know it either. Like you said, we've yet to learn it. And then you just wonder, like, if he can get that far away from Mrs. Coulter, why stay? Like, why? Just leave. Like, leave Mrs. Coulter. She hits you in the head when she's angry. She gives you dirty looks whenever she's mad at herself. It's like, seriously, like, and it is a testament. Obviously, we know that this is the physical kind of manifestation of Mrs. Coulter's feelings about herself. She, you know, she is, does not like herself, feels, you know, kind of angry. And so she takes it out on this gold, on the Golden Monkey. But what are your thoughts about him as a character and just in general?
So a lot of this episode to me, I mean, I think earlier I mentioned that to me, the episode's big theme was change, but also reflection. Mm-hmm. I think that device that they use, cutting back and forth between someone speaking in a different scene to reveal that what we see is not exactly what's happening, was also kind of, it's a mirror, right? Looking back and forth. And I, after seeing this episode and seeing how Mrs. Coulter, how badly she treats the Golden Monkey, that he doesn't speak, that he does whatever she says. I was so grateful for Lyra getting away from her. Mm-hmm. If that's what happened, I mean, she might have been snatched up by her again. But I just saw that this could be Lyra's future if she remained with Mrs. Coulter. That being molded by this woman is to not have any real agency of your own, to not even have an identity. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have a name. Mm-hmm. And she uses both affection and abuse to manipulate him. And that, it's chilling. It's really scary. She does the same thing with Lyra. In one moment, she is having her demon really beat Lyra's demon to subdue her. And then in the next moment, she's trying to be affectionate with her again.
Yeah.
It's classic narcissism. She also uses so much gaslighting, like when she tells her, everybody's forgotten you at Jordan already, like, mm-hmm. move on. Mm-hmm. It's terrifying. And I think the monkey is a reflection of what happens to people who spend too much time around Mrs. Coulter. That she is controlling, manipulating, will use any means to get her end. And she's not, she is in control, but not entirely. Yeah. And so this demon, I felt bad for him, but even though he's like also a villain.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. I was like, please, golden moment. Like when Mrs. Coulter and the golden monkey are looking out the window at Lyra escaping, I'm like, golden monkey, see, you could do it too.
Yes.
just run, pretend you're running after her and then just take off.
Run like the wind, golden monkey, please. Yeah, no, I'm with you.
I also wonder how far he can get away from her, right? I mean, just because he can be the length of the apartment, which is a very large apartment. Yeah. You would not find that apartment in New York City or LA. But if you, just that he can be so far away from her doesn't mean that he can be, you know, miles and miles away. I guess we'll have to see where that goes. But I did just want him to run away because we don't know anything about his personality. We never hear from him, but it just seems like he has been manipulated into being her little minion, and he has some freedom, but he doesn't wield that, right?
Agreed. And what I think about when I think about what you're saying about the golden monkeys, every time I start thinking about, because I think about these demons and I think about them as separate characters, but they're actually the same character. They're the soul of the character that we're talking about. And so every time I start thinking about all the attributes that you just described about the golden monkey, I always then go back and put it in the lens of, man, this is how she feels about herself. This is who she is. This is what's going on inside of Mrs. Coulter. This feeling of being trapped. This feeling of not being able to look herself in the eye. This feeling of like, I want to leave, but I can't leave. Or I, you know, and never having, and even like the fact that the golden monkey was in the office doing all this stuff, making all this commotion. That's a real symbol of the amount of, you know, unrest that's inside of her as a person, that even when she's resting or it's nighttime and everyone else is resting, she's still up stirring. She's still up, you know, in her mind thinking about things. So mm-hmm. I think it really reflects, like, I think that this character really shows, gives us a real insight into who she is as a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just to say, on the subject of demons, we learned a lot more about demons this episode.
We did.
We learned that controlling a demon can control the person, that the demons, when the demons feel pain, so do their people, and ultimately that killing a demon also kills the person, the symbolism is just, I mean, it's killing someone's soul, right? 100%. So.
Yeah, 100%. That butterfly, Adele dying with the butterfly, and you just have that realization of like, man, if anything, if Pan, if she would have went further with Pan, then we lose Lyra, you know? You know? So, yeah, I mean, so at this point, we're going to do this to close out. We're going to go with what we, a little segment called what we like, what we question, and what we want to see more of. Why don't you start us out with what you liked, what you questioned about where we are in the story, and what you want to see more of moving forward in the story?
I mean, continue to really like the way the story is being told. I really enjoy all the narrative devices they're using. And I really, really appreciate seeing the story from multiple perspectives. So we got Roger and Billy's perspective. We got Lyra's perspective. We got Mrs. Coulter's perspective. I mean, we got Boreal's perspective. It makes all of the, and Father McPhail as well. It makes all of the characters a little bit richer. Sometimes stories for children are told from one child's perspective. I like that this is building out the characters more. This is a really plot-driven story, as you know, everyone can tell. There's a lot that happens in these books, and it happens, there's a lot of big action, big moments, but the fact that we're really spending more time with the characters, like even the part of the episode with Ma Costa and taking Billy's sweater, like, those, it's a little moment, right? Ma Costa's only in this episode for a few minutes, but it really develops her character, and it makes us more attached to the Egyptians in general, and to her in particular. And I'm super worried about Billy and Roger, but
yeah.
So that's what I really liked. I would like to see more of the other world, mm-hmm. and I think that. I still don't have anything to say because I just can't believe that already we've crossed into our world. Like, this is basically our world. Yeah. And I'm excited to see, like, what else is there out there? Like, if they're crossing into our world, then what are the other worlds like? I want to see more.
Yeah, no, me too. I think what I like, I like the deep understanding that we're getting of the characters and some of their motivations at this moment in the story. I'm really digging it. I really think that I understand a lot more about Mrs. Coulter even than I did in the first episode, and the depth of, as we've touched on, the depth of her feelings about her worldview, about how she sees other people and they're forgetting about her or forgetting about you, how she sees, you know, like risk, you know, with the whole jumping off the roof and being not afraid of heights, and all of these things start to come about. And I really, really, really think that it's an interesting perspective that they're showing. Lyra being able to get the wool pulled from over her eyes and see the world clearly a little bit more, understanding again that this is not what she thought it was. I really like the way they're developing the characters. And what I want to see more of, I think, like with you, I want to see more of this new world. I want to see more of what is happening in this new world that makes how are people able to walk in between this world? What is going on with that? Where is that going? And my big question moving forward is, who snatched Lyra? That is my big question. Who snatched Lyra? Like, I want to know, like, what happens to her, because it's going to play a pivotal role, and I want to know if she's going to end up with Roger and Billy, if she's going to be able to rescue Roger and Billy, what's going to happen there?
I think my big question is, what's the deal with Grumman?
Yeah.
You know, I think that there's a lot of mystery around Grumman, but I'm not sure why am I supposed to care who he is? What is his significance to this story? We know that he's an explorer and a scholar, but I would like to know, what's his journey, and why is he supposedly crossing worlds? And I want more about Grumman, aside from, it's not him, it is him.
I feel like we're gonna get more. I feel like we're gonna get more. At least we know each episode we're gonna have somebody point him out in a head or ice block skull lineup. Like, somebody's like, that's Grumman. Oh wait, I know that guy, you know? So
also, can we just talk about how Boreal just had a picture of Grumman on his phone?
He enjoys a selfie. What do you want?
Yeah, I'm like, where did, what?
He's like, man, look at this new iPhone 8 and its beautiful camera. It takes great pictures, and it's showing you all. Yeah, Grumman is right there, and it's wild. He shows Thomas the thing about here. Look for. Have you seen this guy? He's like, he's ready. I don't know where he got this. And did he have the cell phone in the other world?
That's the thing. I mean, it doesn't seem like he definitely gets the cell phone when he crosses into the new world, but how did he have the picture of Grumman? I mean, that's my thing. Like, is there a way that he can communicate between worlds? I don't know. And he only had the two parking tickets, right? Which to me says he had recently been in this other world. So I the whole other world thing is obviously a very big question. I want to see more of it, but I also just want, from the story point of view, I want to know more about Grumman and why he's an important character. We haven't seen him at all, but he's had a really outsized role in both episodes.
Agreed. What do you think about this as a theory? Like, one of the theories, and I know like everyone's going to have their theories. One of the theories I have is that maybe perhaps Boreal actually knew, and the Magisterium already knew, that Grumman crossed over, and they've been tailing him, and that when they found out that he might be dead, they wanted to inspect because they wanted to ensure that he really was dead and didn't bring back the information about the other world, which is why they're also scared about Adriel kind of like going down the same path as Grumman.
Yeah. Yeah. I wondered too, the Magisterium has a lot of information. Mm-hmm. Obviously their reach is pretty far. And so, and moves pretty quickly, right? We don't really know where the Magisterium is. I mean, I guess I'm assuming it's in London, but, I guess I wanted to know how they had all this information. They just seem really in the know. They have information that the master doesn't want them to have and isn't sure where they got. And they also have information that Mrs. Coulter doesn't want them to have and isn't sure where they got.
Yeah, no, it's really, really cool. So I think what they've kind of done is closing up and wrapping up, I think, you know, one of the things that we've also spoken about in a more meta conversation is, you know, whether the show is going to spoil the books, or if you read the books, will it be as enjoyable to watch the show? And I think what the showrunners have made a very like clear decision on is that we're going to mix up different elements that we feel will tell the story in a way that's more linear to the way we see the whole entire world. And we're also going to just assume that if you're here watching the show, you're either a show watcher, plainly, that won't even worry about the books till after you're done watching the show, or you're a book reader that honestly, if we mix up these different worlds, it won't spoil anything for you. I think they've made that decision, you know?
Yeah, it's a risky decision to make, I think, when you're adapting work. But I think from a point of view of someone who is interested, is really cares about the show and how the story is told for a mass audience, I like this decision. I find it exciting. I also think that if you've read the books, it's nice to see some changes because it can be a little boring sometimes when you know all of the big reveals are coming, you know, the way the story is being told. And I like the way that they're mixing it up. But I do think as soon as I saw that the two big things that concerned me were when he crossed the world, I was like, what is actually happening here? And why are we doing this now? Mm-hmm. And I was immediately worried about, I have several friends who have told me, oh, I've only read the Golden Compass, or they're thinking about reading the books now that they've seen the first episode of the show. And so I was very worried about them. I remember texting a few people and being like, okay, you need to wait until the show is over if you really want to read these books, because it's unpredictable. I don't know where this story is going to go.
Yeah.
But I think that it's great. Like, from my point of view, the way I consume this show, I think it was a bold decision to make. It seems so far like it was the right decision to make. We'll have to see how it goes. And at some point, I was talking to one of my friends who this is her favorite story. This, when I was a kid, like the Chronicles of Narnia was my favorite fantasy story. Mm-hmm. This was her Chronicles of Narnia, which is kind of funny because this is an anti-religion text, and the Chronicles of Narnia is a very religious text. But she was saying that she's really worried that this story, they're just going to run out of story at some point, and she doesn't know how they're going to fill the time. There's a lot of story. This is a, as I said, this is a plot driven story. So if they fill the time with the character studies, I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
If they start remixing things and it's risky, you know, sometimes changes are good, right? I mean, to reference Game of Thrones again, there were some changes that they made to the source material that were obvious, smart changes that made the story easier to understand, and also were just like interesting things that they did. And then there were some that were really bad and had devastating effects on the end of the story.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about this. I think that it seems so far like this is a good choice. It made this episode wildly exciting, but it could go, well, you know, we're only on episode 2, so we'll have to see where they go from here.
Yeah, I agree. I'm excited for where they're going to go and what's going to happen with it. I actually watched the Comic-Con panel, and one of the things that Jack Thorne spoke about was getting a PhD in the world. And mm-hmm. I thought that he said, I wanted to understand this world and have like a doctorate degree and what is this world about, so that I could put things into an order that made sense for a show, right? So he's really studied and immersed himself in the world and understanding the nuances of each character and where the right time is to introduce things. So I think we just have to trust them a little bit and just like go with it, you know? And I'm excited to do that, because I think, you know, I'm a big fan of The Cursed Child. That's a whole other topic that I think we'll save for another podcast and another time. We're just looking at another story, at the Harry Potter stories. But I really like it, and I'm new to the, I was newer to the Harry Potter world than you were when I first started listening and reading the books and watching the movies. But I really dug that story, and I think he did do that in that story of like really try to be honest with the work, delve into the world and really understand the author's intentions. So I think he's doing a good job. I think they're doing a good job so far.
So. Yeah, I agree.
Yep. Cool. Well, that is our podcast. I want to say thank you to all the support of the first episode. It was super duper appreciated. All the places where people left reviews, all of our family and friends that reached out to us or sent a message. We really appreciate it. Keep sharing it, letting people know about it. And we really appreciate your support.
Yeah, it was very moving and overwhelming to have so many people out the gate be supportive of this project. You know, it reminded me that the whole reason we're doing this is because we're family, and we think these stories bring people together. And I felt like, wow, our family, right, is really big, right? Mm-hmm. That our friends and some people that like we don't even know in real life, like where these are internet friends, were so supportive and so enthusiastic. And yes, thank you. Thank you if you're coming to this and you don't know us as well, for listening to the podcast and taking this journey with us. So that's the end of our show. We do want to hear feedback from you. As we said, we might play with the format a little bit. We're new to podcasting, so we're you know, figuring this out as we go along. If you have feedback for us, you can reach us personally at using our Twitter accounts, or you can email us at kinfolklore@gmail.com. And I think that's it. So we will see you next time.
Yeah.